Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
24 kg. That's 52 pounds. That's how much Pyeong Naidon weighed when she died. She had been beaten, tortured, starved, and strangled to death. And every day, she was only allowed to sleep for 5 hours a day. And any more, and she would be considered lazy by her employers. She was only allowed to eat cold bread soaked in water, cold food straight from the refrigerator, or sometimes plain rice, but only at night. And when she had to use the bathroom, she had to use it with the door open. And when she took a shower, her employers would watch her bathe. And they had rules, so many rules. And if she didn't listen, if she accidentally broke one of them, she would be beaten, shouted at, hit. She was burned with an iron. She was even strangled. And eventually, she would be found dead, tied to a window grill, then left on the floor. And this wasn't a human trafficking situation. This wasn't something that happened far away or long time ago. This was something unimaginable that happened in the suburb of Bishan in 2016, just a couple of years ago. Pyeong Naidon was a Myanmar maid working in Singapore for a family of five. She was killed by Gayathiri Murugayan and Gayathiri's mother, Prima. And the thing is that this wasn't an isolated home. Gayathiri's husband, he wasn't some gangster or thug or ruffian. He wasn't even a regular guy with a regular office job. He was a police officer. Hi, I'm Teddy and welcome to A Briefcase. Today, we are covering the murder of 24-year-old Pyeong Naidon. Pyeong was 24 years old when she died. She was born on 13th June 1992 and she had a 3-year-old son. She was born in a tiny village called the Dimpi Village, part of the Tedim Township in the Chin State. So this village had like 1,500 people, and the Chin State was one of the poorest states in Myanmar, which is already a poverty-stricken country. So it was in a mountainous area, and the only route to her hometown was a 4-hour drive from the Calais Township. So she had 10 siblings, so a really large family, which is more common in farming and agricultural societies. But when she was 5 years old, her parents died. So her family, they really had to take care of themselves. And the thing is that life in the village was really tough. And honestly, by the time that she was murdered in Singapore, 5 of her siblings, they had already died. Now, Pyeong was raised Catholic, and because her parents died, she had a difficult childhood. Her parents were really poor, and all that they left behind was just a bit of farmland. And so her and her siblings used this farmland to try to make a living for themselves. And so she did go to school. She went to school up to grade 9, and she left at 15. And then in the early 2010s, when she was in her early 20s, she had a son. But then the guy that she had a son with left when she was pregnant, which is a completely dicky thing to do, but also not unheard of. And it's something that happens everywhere. So, you know, some men can be pigs. And now after she left school, Pyeong actually became a construction worker, which is an extremely tough labor-intensive job, especially since she had a son. And so, like a lot of other female communities in Southeast Asia, she started hearing from other villagers, other girls who had gone before, that maybe it was worth it to go to Singapore to work as a maid because she could earn so much more money and it wouldn't be as labor-intensive as construction. Now, this is a really common problem, but the thing is that a lot of agencies are very predatory when it comes to girls from poorer countries, poorer villages, and they charge ridiculous amounts of money as agency fees. And because of that, before people even set foot in Singapore to work as helpers, as domestic workers, they would have probably spent thousands of dollars. They would probably have been thousands of dollars in debt just to get to Singapore to work. And so now, Pyeong came to Singapore with a plan. So she was going to work about 2 to 3 years. And usually the first year of work is literally just spent paying off the debt. But when she earned enough, she was going to buy some land and build a house for herself in the Kalei Township. So not in her village, but the town that was 4 hours from her village. So she was going to move up. And so by the time she decided, she was actually below the minimum age. So you need to be at least 23 years old to work in Singapore as a domestic helper. But then the thing is that Pyeong was just 2 months short. And so if you're thinking like, oh, actually 2 months is not a lot, this would have been 2 months worth of employment and 2 months worth of working. So she just told her agent, and her agent actually bribed an immigration agent to change the date of birth about 2 months earlier to April. All right, and then she ends up leaving Myanmar and reaches Singapore in May 2015. And very quickly, she's hired by Gayathri, who was a 35-year-old housewife. And Gayathri was married to Kevin Shelvam, who was a 37-year-old police staff sergeant in the Singapore Police Force. Now, Gayathri and Kevin, they had 2 children. They had a 4-year-old daughter and a baby son. And Gayathri's mom, Prima, also lived with her. And Gayathri's mom was 57 years old. And the thing is that they weren't the only people living in the flat. So I'm assuming that this was a pretty large flat in Bishan. And we do know that the older flats are quite a bit bigger. So Gayathri and Kevin, they actually had a couple of tenants in the flat, which makes this an even more scary, even more intense case. Because can you imagine that you're renting a room in a flat and the owner of the flat is actually abusing somebody? Pyeong's first day on the job was 28th of May 2015. And before she actually started working, Pyeong and Gayathri had an agreement that Pyeong wouldn't have a mobile phone or any day off, which by the way is supposed to be mandated. But in exchange, she would have home rest and, if I'm not wrong, a little bit more money. But I think this is a very dangerous thing to do, because I don't think that you should ever work in a place where they don't allow you to have access to communication, because that's just like one step closer to a vulnerable situation. And the thing is that I think that sometimes employers take advantage of this. Another thing that I do hear from older people especially is because they feel like if their domestic helpers go out and mingle with other people in the same industry, they feel like they could pick up quote-unquote bad habits. But I think that happens when people tend to lack empathy and see their employees as just employees, not as people who really should have a life outside of the workplace, especially when they live in the workplace. Now, another thing that we need to note for this case is that there is CCTV in the house, okay? There is CCTV in the house. This is an important point. And now, given that there are 2 tenants in the house and there are 2 young children in the house, I think that it is fair that you have CCTV in the living areas of the house so that you can keep an eye on the kids. If you're like maybe in the workplace, you want to check in on your family, I think it's like okay, especially with young kids. And especially when you do have a third party taking care of your children. And it does feel a little bit invasive, but I can understand, you know? It's not completely ridiculous to have CCTV in the house. And so now, for the first few months, the abuse was just verbal, which is very toxic and shitty. But you also have to remember that there's 2 tenants in the house and 2 young children in the house. And for some reason, Gayathri, she was depending on Pyeong to take care of housework, because I guess she was busy taking care of the kids as well. And having 2 young children is no joke. So she had a bunch of rules. And whenever she felt that Pyeong wasn't living up to the standards, being quote-unquote disobedient, which is awful, because that's how you describe a child, isn't it? Disobedient. She would actually shout at Pyang, and eventually that escalated, because abuse always escalates. And it took about 5 months, and it eventually reached the point where Gaia Theory was abusing Pyang every single day. Gaia Theory and her mother, they would pour cold water on Pyang. They would slap, kick, punch and stomp on her. They would hit her with plastic bottles, metal ladles, whatever they could get their hands on. They would also pull her hair, and allegedly once when she accidentally burnt her clothes, this girl from the village who probably didn't have much experience with an iron, the same iron that she used to accidentally burn her clothes was taken and used to burn her. And Gaia Theory pressed the iron against her forehead and then burnt her arm. And then she was like, if you like to burn people's things, how would you like it if I burn your hand? So that's full on physical abuse and torture. And the thing is that we don't know if maybe Gaia Theory and Prima were the only ones abusing Pyang. And the thing is that we know that they were physically abusing her in the presence of the children. And I don't know if they ever abused her in the presence of the tenants, but I'm really surprised when researching this case that none of the tenants ever flagged this out to anyone. None of them ever reported her to the police. So this wasn't the shocking thing, because I know sometimes, especially if the tenants are from overseas, you don't want to do anything that could risk getting the police involved or getting your employment pass or S pass or whatever jeopardized, right? So what really shocked me when researching this case is that apparently Kevin also abused Pyang. Kevin, the policeman husband. So it's alleged at one point that he actually used a bat to hit her. What? What even? And the thing is, when you really think about it, because I spent way too long thinking about this, what kind of person would stay married and have children with someone that abused someone else, that felt so free to abuse someone else so badly? And maybe if you're somebody who can enable, who can tolerate that, maybe you're kind of a shitty person as well, right? And so the abuse was verbal, it was physical. They also deprived her. In the time that Pyang worked for this family, she lost 38% of her body weight. And when she died, she was only 24 kg. That's the weight of a child. And this was a 24-year-old woman. And she didn't have any food. And when she did have food, the food was bread soaked in water, cold food from the refrigerator, plain rice. And if she did try to take any more food, she would be hit and she would be punished, which is ridiculous, because when you're starving somebody and overworking them and expecting them not to at least try to get something to eat, isn't that just, you know, human instinct? And the thing is that Gaia Theory and Prima, they made Pyang work while wearing multiple layers of masks. And do you guys remember COVID? And remember when we had to wear masks? It was hot and sweaty and uncomfortable. Gaia Theory made Pyang wear multiple layers of masks while doing hot and sweaty housework. And she called her unhygienic. The thing is that Pyang, she was still holding on. She was still persevering for the sake of her family. And even though she didn't have a phone, she still managed to make a total of 5 calls to her family over the 1 year or so where she worked for Gaia Theory. And during the first 4 calls, she didn't actually mention that anything was wrong, because I think she didn't want to worry them. But during the 5th call, on 12th of July 2016, she actually mentioned that she felt sick and that maybe she wanted to come home. And this was probably because the abuse was really escalating by that point of time. And honestly, this was just a couple of weeks before she died. Okay, if the tenants didn't notice anything and the neighbors didn't notice anything, then surely the doctors during the medical checkups would have noticed something, you think? Because by law, domestic helpers, domestic workers have to go for medical checkups every 6 months, and this happened about a year or so. And so when the doctors did the checkup, they did notice the bruises and the swelling. And Gayathri actually just said that, oh, you know what? Pyeong is just really clumsy. She did this to herself. And it is incredibly disappointing, because surely a doctor would be able to tell if an injury is an accident or not, right? And the other thing I think is that when the doctor is questioning a domestic helper, I know that there are issues with translation and everything, but I don't think that the employer should be there. And isn't it ridiculously invasive for your employer to know about your medical history? Shouldn't there be some sort of professional to act as a translator or as an intermediary if one is needed, right? Yeah, and the policeman, Mr. Policeman Kevin, Gayathri's husband, he was asked for feedback on his domestic helper. And I'm assuming that his feedback was that she wasn't particularly good, because they actually offered to replace her with another maid, which he rejected. And at this point, I think we can conclude that the punishments were probably not really because she wasn't a particularly good helper. You know, because if she wasn't a particularly good helper, they could have just replaced her with somebody else. I think that we can all tell that these quote-unquote punishments were some sort of sick power trip by Gayathri. The thing is that what really infuriates me is that, you know, sometimes people will say that they are a good employer, that they are not an abuser because they don't hit their domestic worker, but surely that is the bare minimum, right? Can you imagine writing on Glassdoor, "Oh, I'm so pleased because my employer does not hit me." The starving, the sleep deprivation, the shouting is nothing, right? This case was just very frustrating to research. So now we're going to take a look at the timeline. A little while after Pyeong's last call, they start tying her to the window grill at night. And they would tie her to the window grill and she would sleep on the floor. She wouldn't even have a mattress or a bed. And I think that the reason why they did this is because if I was them, I would be really worried that she would try to start running away. And so now we have to fast forward to the day of the incident on 25th July 2016. So we start from late at night at about 11:40 to 11:55. Gayathri physically assaults Pyeong for being quote-unquote too slow when doing the laundry. And at that point of time, Pyeong was swaying. She was physically swaying. I think she was so hungry and tired and sleep deprived. And also, I cannot understand why they were doing laundry so close to midnight. So Gayathri, she hits Pyeong with a detergent bottle and Pyeong falls backwards. She just couldn't get up. So Gayathri calls her mother, Prima, over and they take turns splashing water on her. So she's passed out. Do they bring her to the doctor? Do they bring her to the A&E? No, they drag her to the bedroom and Gayathri kicks her in the stomach while Prima punches and strangles her. So this is a 57-year-old woman. And after the beating, Pyeong, she's so tired, she's so hungry, she's like, "Can I have dinner?" But Gayathri says that she gave her food before, but she was quote-unquote too sleepy. But honestly, it's more like she passed out. And now she could sleep without dinner. And Gayathri, she ties Pyeong to the window grill and kicks her one last time for good measure before leaving her. And Pyeong is left to sleep, injured, bruised, starving in her wet clothes. At 5 a.m, just 5 hours, Gayathri comes to try to wake her up and she's not waking her up. And I don't know if she was dead already, but if she was dead by then, surely you'd be able to tell. But these horrible women, they aren't admitting anything. So instead of calling the police or the hospital, she kicks and stamps on Pyeong's head and neck and she pulls her hair and strangles her. And Prima, Gayathri's mom, is also in the room. By then, I think that Pyeong was probably already gone, but we don't know. And then they leave her on the floor in her wet clothes, passed out until 9:22 a.m. That's 4.5 hours. And then they prop her up and they try to feed her like a cereal drink and they try to warm up her hands and legs, which makes me think that she's already gone, because when you've passed, your hands and feet will be cold. And finally, the mom, Prima, she's like, "Okay, you know what? Let's call a doctor," which is a bit like, no shit, bro. And like anyone who hears that someone else is passed out, the doctor was like, oh my god, you need to call an ambulance. Anyway, I can't come in until much later. But Gaia Theory is like, no worries, I'll wait. And they know that they have fucked up. And they know what they're doing is wrong. So they change Pyeong out of her wet clothes and they carry her to the sofa as if they don't leave her to sleep by the window grill on the cold floor. And the doctor arrives at 10:50 on 26 July 2016. And Pyeong was dead. She had a gaping mouth, cold skin, and dilated pupils. And for some reason, Prima and Gaia Theory, they're so shocked. They're like, no way, no way she's dead. She was moving just minutes before you came. And they were like, oh my, shall we call an ambulance? And the doctor was like, I am going to stay here and I'm going to wait for the police. And while they were waiting for the police, the doctor actually asked Gaia Theory if she gave Pyeong food and if she beat Pyeong, because it was so obvious. The signs of abuse were so obvious. And Prima, the mom, she had the audacity to lie. She was like, oh no, you know what? Pyeong actually ate a lot. And the doctor, eventually, she called the police herself. So I think that Gaia Theory actually told the doctor that she called the police, but she didn't actually call the police, or the doctor actually like just eventually was like, you know what, I'm going to call the police myself. And at 11:30 a.m., less than 12 hours after the laundry incident, Pyeong was pronounced officially dead. And the police, they were like, oh my god, Gaia Theory, why didn't you call the ambulance? And Gaia Theory was like, oh, I didn't think that her condition was very serious. They found 47 external injuries, and they also found that Pyeong died of a brain injury with severe blunt trauma to the neck. They also found that if she had not died of this, she probably would have just died of starvation soon enough. And Gaia Theory and her mother, they were both remanded in prison, and Gaia Theory was found to have obsessive compulsive disorder, and she also had postpartum depression, which she got right after the birth of her second child. And now the case court actually started on 23rd February 2021. And at first, Gaia Theory, she actually pled guilty to one charge of culpable homicide and 27 charges of causing hurt and 87 charges of maid abuse. And at the point of time that we find out about Gaia Theory's mental issues, we also found out that she had an abortion on February 2016. And it looks kind of like they were trying to get some sort of extenuating circumstances for her mental state. And so the judge was like, okay, you know what? I'll give a final judgment on a later date. And this date was 29th April 2021. But on that day, she tells the court that she, you know what? She might retract her guilty plea. And the reason she does that is to try and see if she can change it from first degree culpable homicide to second degree culpable homicide, which has a lower maximum sentence of 15 years. And she also tried to get a gag order so that her kids wouldn't have to grow up with a mother who was known to be a terrible person, a maid abuser, and so that her kids wouldn't be ostracized in school. The thing is that her children are innocent here, but the reality is if she didn't want her kids to grow up with the reputation of having a terrible abusive mother, then she shouldn't have been a terrible abusive person. So Prima, the kid's grandmother and Gaia Theory's mom, was also abusive. But the lawyer was also like, look how she gave Pyeong food and applied lotion to her rashes, which, again, we must note, is the bare minimum to be a decent human being. And it's also mentioned during the case, and again, we can see that they're trying to get some sort of extenuating circumstance, that Prima's father died when she was young, and that her son, Gaia Theory's brother, committed suicide in 1998. Which is terrible. They also tried to talk about the stress of being the caregiver to her sick husband, so caregiver burnout. So these are really quite unfortunate circumstances, but many people suffer from terrible, stressful circumstances and don't become abusers. Now, Gaia Theory, she's sentenced to the maximum of 20 years for culpable homicide, and she also gets 10 years for the abuse, so she has a total of 30 years of prison time, including the time that she spent in remand, which was 6 years. Her mom, Prima, was sentenced to 14 years, but she's still waiting for her last charge, her 49th charge, pending trial, of causing evidence to disappear. And now Kevin, the husband, they got divorced and he was obviously suspended from the police. But he is still pending. And if anything, I feel like he should have an even more severe punishment because wasn't he a police officer? Wasn't he supposed to enforce the law while this kind of crime was happening in his own home? And then after all the sentencing, Gaia Theory had the audacity to appeal. She said that, oh, I'm being physically and sexually abused by my inmates here in prison, and me and my mom have been denied medical care. And wait, Gaia Theory also claimed that while she was in prison, she actually exchanged WhatsApp messages with Pyeong's relatives, and Pyeong's relatives forgave her. But the thing is that she was in prison. Where did you get a phone from behind bars, friend? And so she was trying to get a lighter sentence. She was trying to get 12 to 15 years instead. But this was dismissed, and, you know, rightly so. So Pyeong's family, they were given the full insurance payout, which included a full death benefit, repatriation costs, and a special gratuity payment, which I think is the bare minimum of what you could do. They also had assistance traveling to Singapore to reclaim her body. And now, when I was researching this particular case, I also found some interesting statistics. So I'm just going to share it here. Now, there's an interview that's posted on a Straits Times article where they mentioned that there were about 250,000 or so workers and only 270 physical abuse cases reported. So that's 0.1%. And apparently, of those cases reported, less than half are warranted. But the thing is, when we look at the statistics and we look at the circumstances of how this case occurred, and when we look at the power dynamics between an employer and an employee who spends most of their life in the same home, we know that the most serious cases aren't the ones that are being reported. There could be more cases that just aren't reported out there. And for this particular case, we know that Pyeong was failed on so many levels by her agents, by doctors, who just let things slide. So I guess I just don't know how to really end this case, aside from being like, if you see something, just say something. So I have a lot of feelings about this case, and this was such a massive thing when it came out, especially since there was like literally a policeman involved in the abuse. And personally, I don't think that 30 years is enough. You know, it's a year of abuse, it's a year of near daily and documented physical abuse, because by the way, they had like the CCTV footage of the abuse, you know? I think that 30 years is incredibly kind. And I think if there was ever a clear-cut time to give an example, if there was a clear-cut situation to be like, this is an example that killing another person will get you life imprisonment or will get you the death sentence, this really should have been it, you know? And so there is, of course, also the argument that this wasn't an intent to murder, and there have been so many extenuating circumstances being brought in, like the OCD, like the postpartum depression. But the thing is that what do you think would happen if you beat, staff, and choke somebody for an extended period of time? What do you think would happen when... Did they think that she would have just walked out and left from these circumstances unscathed? Clearly they did these things because they wanted to inflict some sort of punishment, right? Because clearly they know that physical abuse sucks, because now Gaia Theory is complaining about physical abuse while she's in prison, which shouldn't happen. But also, I guess... And the fact that it's not murder and it's culpable homicide just because she didn't sit there planning and scheming this, it makes me feel really uncomfortable. But I don't know, man. As always, I'm completely unqualified to have these opinions. And if you are a qualified lawyer or judge or public prosecutor, first of all, hi. And second of all, if you can maybe explain it a little bit better in the comment section of this podcast on Spotify. Spotify now has a comment section, and just drop me a note and we will publish it, and maybe we can all get a little bit more educated on this kind of thing. As always, you can find me at A Briefcase Podcast on Instagram, and you can find me online at abriefcasepodcast.com. And do remember to join us next week for another briefcase.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.